We're going to get started. This is the Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs Committee. Today is Wednesday, February 27th. We do not yet have a quorum, so we're going to start with Representative Rukavina here. No? Okay.
I'll present the quorum then.
Okay, great. Is anyone on the agenda here?
Yes.
Representative Houston, why don't you come forward? You can go first.
Come on down.
Good.
We'll get started. We won't have a quorum, and so as soon as we get a quorum, in the event you're finished, we will then just move your bill.
Okay.
Okay?
I appreciate that.
All right. Representative Houston, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't even have a copy of the bill in front of me, but basically what this bill does, there's an old law from the 1930s on the book that requires a city to go to a referendum before they build, before they can expend money on a veterans memorial, either to build it or to maintain it. And so this is not a referendum to actually raise a tax specific for it or anything. It's just, and in the ordinary course, they can't make expenditures unless they go first to a referendum. And I don't know what the origins of it was back in the 1930s, but it's different procedures than we have, as far as I know, for anything else. So the goal here would just be to say that a city, through its ordinary course of its budgeting process, if they decide that they would like to spend some dollars on maintaining or building a veterans memorial, just like they would for a city hall or a park or some other type of thing, that they could do it and leave it to the local control instead of requiring a referendum.
Okay.
That's what it is. And just so folks know, the reason that I'm carrying this bill this year is that we do have a bonding request in for a veterans memorial in Richfield, which Richfield is actually not funding. It's private money being raised, but they will be the repository for the $200,000 state money if we get that bonding, and so this just allows them to do that, and then to maintain it going forward.
Okay, great. Concerns or questions from members? Representative Diskin.
Just a quick question. Thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed that the description of the bill says War Veterans Memorial. I'm just wondering if there's anything to do with wars. And I don't read the word war anywhere in this statutory provision. And so, you know, if it says war, does that mean they can't do something for Vietnam because officially that wasn't a war, it was a fleet, you know what I'm saying?
Representative Keith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, and as far as I know. And in the language of the statute says a monument in recognition of services performed by soldiers, sailors, Marines, and war veterans. So it would not necessarily have to be a war veteran.
Mm-hmm. Further questions, Representative Diskin.
Then, Madam Chair, for the and I'd like the author to consider this for the people who are actually looking up statutes and looking up references to statutes, if it wouldn't be prudent to change the title on 1.7 to simply be Memorials for Veterans.
Representative Houston.
Sounds good to me. That makes good sense. I didn't even notice that.
Representative Diskin?
Madam Chair, I'll make that motion.
We don't have a quorum, so I can't let you make that motion. Representative Diskin.
But I would be okay. I mean, that would be fine for me.
I did it.
Members and Representative Lanning, do you believe that there'd be any problem with putting this on the consent calendar?
Not as far as I'm concerned.
All right. That would be the motion when we have a quorum, if that's fine with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Diskin.
Madam Chair, if staff could help me remember when we do have a quorum to make that amendment, I'd appreciate it.
All right.
It looks like I've got a lot of bills to think about here, and I might forget.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Diskin.
Thank you. Diskin. Appreciate it.
All right. Next on the agenda, Representative Rukavina. Are you here?
I'll present it.
Hey, Representative Rukavina, we don't yet have a quorum, so when we do, we will be moving that your bill be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And when you do get a quorum, if you could make I want to do what the Senate did last week, and that would be on line 1.10 to line 1.13 after colon to eliminate the rest of that language. So that notwithstanding at the end of that first subdivision would be eliminated.
Okay.
And on page 2, on line 2.9 to 51% of the residents to join it in where it's blank there.
What percent, Representative?
51%. Suppose I could request.
Questions from members. All right, Representative Rucavina, go ahead.
Well, Madam Chair and members, the mayor of the city of Aurora, Mary Hess, is with me, and the previous mayor, Mr. Bill Ocala, who used to be a legislator, by the way, from up there, they had asked for taxing authority for a hospital district. The White Community Hospital serves the, it's a non-profit, was owned at one time by, I believe, the communities of White, Aurora, and White Lake. But then became a nonprofit. It has an attached nursing home. The hospital is, like all nursing homes especially, has put some financial strains on the facility. I believe a management company now is in the nursing home part of it. It's a critical access hospital under federal law. So we're trying to establish a taxing district here, much like I believe there's one in Cook County and the Cook City of Cook area. And what the amendment did was provide for a reverse referendum. When I eliminated that language on page 1, it requires a vote of the cities and townships that would join from their governing boards. It also provides for a reverse referendum. And I think it's basically the rest of it, they can vote up to a 600th, a little better of a percent tax for the area. And that raises the approximately, we were attempting to raise around 200, I believe, 200,000 or a little over. So that's where we came up with that figure. I did get a fiscal note, Madam Chair, yesterday, which I suppose wouldn't be a concern of this committee, but will in taxes of $9,000, that there could be potential of that. And I have a resolution of support from the town of White and the city of Aurora in my packet here. And so with that, Mr. Jim Carroll is the administrator from the hospital and nursing home, and he'll probably tell you a little bit more about it.
All right.
And then my good friend, Mayor Hess, who I worked with once upon a time. Well, I don't know if I should let her talk, but maybe.
All right. Please go ahead and state your name for the record.
Okay. My name is Jim Carroll. I'm the CEO of White Community Hospital in Aurora. And, Madam Chair, I'd like to thank Representative Rucavina for his efforts in getting this legislation through the legislative process. It's something our hospital drastically needs to keep going. Mr. Don Barstead, the chair of our hospital board and our whole board, is in total support of the tax district legislation. The White Hospital, Community Hospital and Nursing Home, is located in the city of Aurora and provides services to the extending to the area through the east range, eastern portion of the Iron Range. The city of Aurora is located on the eastern edge of this here, along with the White Lake, approximately 60 miles north of Duluth, and as Representative Rucavina mentioned, it's the critical access hospital, which a lot of the smaller hospitals, especially up in northeast and southwest Minnesota, are now. It is it's been stressed drastically in the last 6 years since the closure of LTV. There was a loss of approximately 1,400 jobs at that point in time within our service area, which is about 12,000 people. The White Community Complex is a 16-bed hospital and a 69-bed nursing home, and we offer services such as surgery, emergency room with physician coverage, helipad for transport of patients, critical patients, We also have basic services such as x-ray lab, CT scan, PT and OT departments, which are very active because they contract with several school districts for physical therapy and occupational therapy. And we have a small clinic within the hospital that is used. One of the offices rented by a family practice physician. We're also renting space to a podiatrist, an ophthalmologist. We've set up an optical shop, and an optometrist comes 2 days a week. So it's kind of a pretty active little place. This facility is a great asset to the citizens of the community, and is also one of the largest employers in the area. The hospital and nursing home combination employ about 140 personnel. Due to the loss of the jobs that we talked about before, and the economic downturns, the hospital correspondingly has had economic downturns also. And we are in a critical need now for upgrading capital equipment as well as major infrastructure changes and major repairs such as roofs and boilers and so on. There's been very little done at that facility in the last 6-7 years addressing those needs. And that's why this legislation is so important to us. It is hoped that brighter days may be just ahead for us because there's projects such as PolyMet and Wasabi Nugget, which could employ approximately 500 new jobs in the area. So, like our school district has had a major bond issue and is gearing up for possible expansion. The hospital is also going to have to do that to maintain the viability for the area.
If I could interrupt you for just one moment, I'm going to officially call the meeting to order. We now have a quorum.
Okay.
So please go ahead.
Okay. Recently, area residents took that commitment to passing that school referendum that I had mentioned to earlier. And we feel that in the best interest of the east end of the range as well as White Community Hospital, it's important for us to continue to provide medical services for this 12,000 population. We feel that it's in the best public interest that a hospital district be established within the current service areas, which I believe is contained in the legislation there, the six entities. And two entities have already have passed resolutions, which Representative Rukavina spoke about. I'd like at this time to address their... introduce Mary Hess, our mayor of Aurora, to speak on behalf of the citizens of Aurora as to the need for this facility going forward. Thank you for your time here today, and after she's done with her comments, we'll be open for questions and answers.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Hess. Go ahead. State your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I thank you for letting us speak directly to you this afternoon on our White Community Hospital. And as mayor of the city of Aurora, my name is Mary Hess, and I am speaking on behalf of the citizens of Aurora. The White Community Hospital and the nursing home, that facility is a tremendous asset to our community, and we need to do anything possible to keep it running. And again, I want to thank you for any consideration that you may give us. Thank you.
All right. Questions from members. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And I know what it's like. My mother lives in a small town, and I know how important it is to be able to have a hospital and a nursing home. And I totally understand what you're going through trying to keep it going, because it's important to provide that service to your residents. I'm wondering about the other cities. What if they choose not to become in the hospital district, and you wouldn't be able to get any revenue? Say, I don't know if the Wabik, have they signed up, or... I'm just kind of concerned if you're going to be able to get enough money to run the whole operation that way.
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, the bill, as you see, it provides for two or more, and right now we do have the two, and I'm anticipating that we'll probably have at least one more. I'm hoping that, Buavik and that. The mayor was on today. I didn't get a chance to talk to him. He happens to be a librarian for the Arrowhead Library System. But I don't know if they can, I think they can go at it alone. It's a decision that the taxpayers and the governing bodies will have to make. If just the city of Aurora, let's say that Aurora, Hoyt Lake, and White joined in, the average tax, or the tax on a $100,000 home would be $75 to raise the $200,000 levy. But they have the discretion to raise up to that percentage. So, you know, they could choose to levy less. If everybody joined in on it, the average home in some of these communities would be about $25. But, you know, there is in the city of Bowabic, the lake expansion at the Giant Ridge ski area. And so there's a lot of expensive homes going up there that would help with the rest of them. There's a lot of runs from the ambulance runs and to this hospital from Giant Ridge ski area, so you can imagine. I mean, but the bill does provide that just two of them can institute this, and a reverse referendum is there, and they have to answer to the voters like us. So.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina. I went up and looked, I have it right in front of me, 447.31, and that's when we removed that language from the bill, the notwithstanding piece, it looks like we did then allow for the reverse referendum on the creation of the board itself or of the hospital district. However, there is no provision in this bill which would allow for reverse referendum on the levy that the bill that the board, once it's created, would decide to implement. Is there? I can't find anything on the levy itself with reverse referendum.
Madam Chair, I'd ask counsel on that because I was concerned, and I had concerns expressed to me on the reverse referendum would have only been able to be done after the hospital district was formed. I didn't like that, so we took that language out. Senator Tom Stoney took it out in the Senate. But if it didn't also allow on the taxing, I mean, what the tax is going to be, I guess I would ask counsel to comment on.
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair, Representative Diskins, the language that was taken out, as I understand, was to, you're right, it relates to the creation of the district only, but I was also going to, there are two things that came up with that. One, on the levy, I don't think it has a separate, there's no separate referendum on the levy in this bill. So this would be a reverse referendum on the creation of the district. But also I wanted to point out that on line 1.16, it sort of cancels out what you just, the amendment that you just talked about, because it says, except as otherwise provided, it's organized and has the powers under 447.31, except subdivision 2. And I think that if what you want is a reverse referendum option for creation of the district, instead of taking out the language, it should be replaced with language that says that it's subject to reverse referendum.
Well, Madam Chair, I would entertain that as a motion.
I think that creation of the district means that you're saying that they can levy.
You know, and Madam Chair, and Representative Biskin, you know, being the good fiscal watchdog that you are, and I commend you for that. I would assume that Mayor Hess and Mayor Marlene Postick from Hoyt Lakes and the supervisors from the town of White and other townships that may want to go in are going to call public meetings and explain this.
Right.
And they're going to emphasize that they have the authority to tax up to 0.066 to 6 whatever it is percent of tax capacity, what those impacts would be on the average home on a $100,000 home. And then the citizens from there are going to say, no, don't do this, or we'll have a reverse referendum or whatever, or, you know, that when they impose it, that they're also going to have public meetings. But I don't know what other hospital taxing districts do if they allow a reverse referendum on the formation itself, and then, again, on what the tax would be. I don't know where we do that normally. I mean, when we get elected on a local level, we set a levy at a school board, and there's, you know, once you set the levy, you explain it to the voters. And
Representative Rukavina, Ms. Dyson actually has a sentence that could fix it for you. If you read that. Representative Solberg.
I would be concerned of any municipality, because you're creating, in a sense, a municipality here, of having them have a reverse referendum once the levy is established. I mean, we've got open meeting laws, and we have truth in taxation. I would think they would be required to have the truth in taxation portion of their law, unless they're exempt from that. But, I mean, that's the process we have for municipalities, cities, schools, and everything else, to have the truth in taxation. We don't take your levies from the city and put it on to the as a reverse referendum.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, Representative Rukavina, I mean, it's your bill. And so whatever form you want it in, I just wanted some clarification on the verbiage reverse referendum. Right? And as I looked through it, right, I noticed that by reinstating the provisions of 447.31, we were putting a reverse referendum on the creation of the district, but in nowhere could I find the reverse referendum on the taxation itself, and so I was just questioning if it was there or not, all right? And, you know, I think Representative Solberg's point is well taken, that for other municipalities, we currently do not have reverse referendum on levy, all right? And, I'm not arguing one way or the other. I'm sure that'll be the tax committee's job to argue one way or the other on that, as well as the implications of the sentence, which is on page 2, line 32, where this particular levy must be disregarded in the calculation of all other rate or per capita levy limitations imposed by law. That's a curious sentence, and again, not one for this group to argue, I suppose, unless, and of course we are concerned with the property taxes, and we give to local units of government, and the more freedom we give, more taxes they levy. So it is a concern, but probably one to be tackled again in tax committee.
All right. Representative Rukavina, I believe staff did say that there is an issue with your amendment. Is that correct, Ms. Dyson?
Madam Chair, they said that by taking out that sentence but leaving in that other in subdivision 2 where it says 447.31 subdivision 2 does not apply, it sort of cancels out what you were trying to do. So one option would be to place on page 1, line 10, after the period, a sentence that says, the proposed resolution to establish the hospital district must be published and is subject to referendum as provided in section 447.31 subdivision 2, if that's what you would wanted to have.
Madam Chair, I would have no problem with that. And Ms. Dyson, do I have to strike the except subdivision 2 there?
No. Madam Chair, no. The I would leave that in because there are other things in subdivision 2 that relate to powers of the district that, as I understood it, you did not want to have apply to this district. So it would be to just pull in the publication and reverse referendum provision by putting in that sentence, but otherwise leave the subdivision 2 as not applying.
Madam Chair,
Representative Rukavina, I would make that motion if that's what you would like.
I would appreciate it.
All right, I would make that motion, and if you would just repeat that, Ms. Dyson, one last time. On page 1, line 10, after the period, insert, the proposed resolution to establish the hospital district must be published and is subject to referendum as provided in section 447.31 subdivision 2. And I will write that out for the committee staff.
That would also be deleting then line 1.10 after the period, the language that is currently there through line 113. Mm-hmm. And then my amendment will also insert on page 2, line 2.9, the 51% that Representative Rukavina had asked for earlier.
Madam Chair?
Representative Rukavina.
Clarification from Council then. So, Ms. Dyson, the language that you just proposed then would pertain to a reverse referendum and not a referendum, a regular referendum in order to form it.
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair and Representative Bukovina, in the subdivision 2, when a hospital district is created by resolution of the governing bodies, it's subject to reverse referendum. If it were a petition of residents of the district, that would require a referendum. But since what you're setting up here is provision for the governing bodies to establish it by resolution, I believe that only ties in the reverse referendum. Define Representative Rosavina. All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, motion prevails. All right. With that, the bill is before us. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? All right. Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 2753 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Hearing none, motion prevails. Oh, one, hearing one.
Madam Chair, thank you. The committee is very excited about it.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, next is Representative Mull. Please come to the table. All right, Representative Moe, I will move that House File 2932 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Representative Moe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also have a technical amendment that you all should have. Worked with Kent Sewell from the Minnesota Association of Townships with just some...
It'll be passed out right now.
Great. And so I'd like to... If you'd like, we could move that afterwards or now...
If you just could please tell us what the amendment does and what you've worked out, and that'd be great.
Kent Sewell can speak to the details of the amendment.
Mr. Sewell, please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kent Sewell with the Minnesota Association of Townships. And while this bill did not generate from our association, it does impact our members, and we're part of it. So we discovered a circular problem with the way it was originally drafted. With the way the bill is drafted, we would have a situation where the town supervisors would hand money to the cemetery directors, who would turn around and give it right back to the supervisors. And so what this amendment does is just make it clear that the supervisors, if there is a separate board of directors for the cemetery, give them the money and they expend it pursuant to the direction of the supervisor. It then also clarifies, makes some of the subheading titles consistent with the rest of the bill.
All right. I would move the A081170 amendment. Questions from members? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then to the bill. I have here with me Terry Greenside, a township board member from Deer River Township. Many of you know, across Minnesota, we have rural township cemeteries, many of which have gone into disrepair. Townships have funds to maintain the grounds of those cemeteries, but the current law doesn't allow them to actually maintain or to improve the headstones. Many of these people have no family accountable anywhere to maintain those headstones. Out of respect and wanting to recognize the history of the people who settled northern Minnesota, they would like to have the opportunity to just use that fund to maintain those headstones. With a rural cemetery right near where I live in Ken Lake Township, I think it's a terrific idea. So with that, I'll turn it over to Terry Greenside.
Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
My name is Terry Greenside. I'm a supervisor with Deer River Township. And thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing us to be here today. And I'd also like to thank Frank for bringing this forward. Our cemetery was started in about 1906 with our first burial and has been used continuously since then. We've collected dollars from the sale of lots and have been put into the permanent fund, and today we have about $25,000 in that fund. We've been able to spend the interest from the fund, but that hasn't amounted to enough dollars to go in and do the repairs that we want to do. We currently levy dollars every year for the care and the maintenance of the cemetery, for the mowing, for the sextons, the other duties that have to be taken care of. But we would like to go through our cemetery and do the straightening of the headstones that have settled and sank over the years, the filling of the graves. And we're not sure how much it's going to cost, but we estimate that we've got about 75 sites that need some work on. Some are minor work, but some are going to require some larger equipment to move the stones without breaking them and resetting these stones. Our township is a very active township with the people in it. And they're very proud and respectful about people that have been here before. In fact, if you look at a history of the Deer River Township area and you walk through the cemetery, it's almost a who's who is in the history book of the early loggers and of the early settlers that have been there. And we've had some but very limited success in asking the family members to contribute to fixing it, because in a lot of cases there's just nobody left to do the maintenance of the site. So we want to take a one-time effort and go through the cemetery and do the straightening and the leveling of the stones and the filling of the site. And we want to do that out of respect for the people that were there before. They did a lot for us, and it's just something we feel that we need to do. By being able to access the dollars, we would be able to do that. Otherwise, it's just something we can't. We will continue to levy dollars for the regular maintenance of the cemetery, the mowing, things like that. But this would give us an opportunity to do a one-time pass through it and get everything looking pretty good. We've got stones that are buried in the ground, some are half-tipped. So, well, I'm sure you've seen a lot of rural cemeteries, and they all kind of look like Halloween, and we want to make ours look a little better than that if we can.
Questions for members? All right, hearing none, is there anyone in the audience?
Is this the general bill, or
Representative Mowat's general?
General, correct.
All right, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? All right, questions from members? All right, hearing none, I would renew my motion that House File 2932, as amended, be recommended to pass and move placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Come on, committee.
All right, members, Representative Thiessen presented his bill already. I would move that House File 2896 be recommended to pass and placed on the consent calendar. But Representative Biskins has an amendment. Representative Biskins, do you remember your amendment?
Yes.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, during the presentation, as we discussed these memorials, I noticed that the verbiage of the section of statute did not specifically use the word war veterans in exclusivity. The verbiage of the law talks about recognition of services performed by soldiers, sailors, etc., without specifically only focusing in on war veterans. And so I think just for cleaning up the statutes, my motion was to, on page 1, line 7, in the title, delete the word war.
All right. And Representative Thiessen was fine with that. Representative Scalzi.
The word war is two more places in there. Did we want to take it out the other two places or just that one place? It's on line 1.3 and also line 1.13.
Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, I did look at that. However, in those places, it's not exclusive. War veterans are just a component of a larger group. And so that's why I thought to take the word war out of the title would be more representative of the section.
All right. Further questions from members? All those in favor of the Biskins amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, motion prevails. All right. I would renew my motion that House File 2896 be recommended to pass as amended and placed on the consent calendar. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. All right, next on the agenda is Representative Fritz. Here. All right, now, members, these are tax bills that we have consistently been passing through to the tax committee without recommendation, but we do hear them here. So I would move that House File 3225 be referred to the Committee on Taxes without recommendation. Representative Fritz, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. I'm Representative Patty Fritz from the counties of Rice and Steele in District 26B, and I'm here on behalf of the city of Medford, which is a small city in my district. And we are here In your packet, actually, there's a letter from Mayor Dan Kaiser that lays out some information for you on why we are here to ask for your approval to ask to let the folks of Medford vote on a local sales tax option, to give them that opportunity to vote yes or no. They have been here before this this body and with this particular issue and did not receive the okay for that. So we're back again today. And also, Madam Chair, in your packet and members, is a resolution from the mayor and the city council folks from the city of Medford asking also for your consideration.
Questions from members? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Fritz, do they charge the impact fee is the wrong word, but when you get new development, do they charge a fee to help in this process? I know in Lakeville there are fees associated with hooking up to the water systems, et cetera, so that the new growth pays for itself and for the expansions, and that we don't have a situation where you don't have the capital cost to provide the infrastructure for the new growth. Is that the case in Medford?
I don't know the answer. Thank you, Madam Chair. I do know that we do have, they do have quite a bit of new development in the area, and I'm hoping that they charge a fee for that. I know that they have, and in the letter, it doesn't specifically say that, but they have done quite a bit on their own in the community trying to find monies for this, but the amount of money that, they're looking at is like $10 million. And we don't, it's a small growth community, but I can certainly check on that and go ask the mayor.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Chair and members. I am a little concerned that we did try to put into law a prioritizing process by which funds for these types of projects through state allocation can be analyzed by the experts rather than by committee. And this, it looks like, you know, for some reason, expert judgment has placed Medford 91st on the list, right? And this move would actually then say, well, okay, fine, but we don't agree with that ranking. And so, yeah, just a little concern, and if we open this barn door, you know, the animals may come scurrying out all over the place, and we're going to see a lot of these types of requests down the road.
Thank you, Representative Biskins, and Madam Chairman, if I might respond to that. Yes, I'm also disturbed by being ranked 91st, and this is a wastewater treatment plant that is already 20 years beyond what it was supposed to serve. And so, and we're on the Strait River, very close to that area, and I really don't understand all the criteria on ranking and why we are 91st. I would hope that we would be moving up.
All right. Further questions from members? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? All right. Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 3225 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes without recommendation. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Next is House File 2780, Representative Yarrow. This is another House file that will be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. So I will move that House File 2780 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes without recommendation. Representative Yarrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Lady, and members of the committee. House File 2780 would raise the matching money from hospitality tax in Duluth for the expansion of the Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center. The bill is already in the tax bill that's going to come to the floor, but in case it gets vetoed, we would appreciate to have this bill in the tax committee to consider it. But it has, last year it was vetoed, and I hope it's not vetoed this year.
All right. Question for Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Yarros, I'm just curious. What is the rate of sales tax in Duluth going to be after this is imposed?
Representative Yarros.
Madam Chair Lady and Resident Holberg. Are you talking about the entire 6.5 and the whole thing? Yes, 6.5, and then when Levander enacted, and the legislature, Republican legislature enacted the sales tax for Minnesota, Duluth got an extra cent on everything that that the state imposed a sales tax on. So that's 7.5. And then the hospitality tax is 1.5%, and this would make it 2.25%. So it would be 9.75%.
Representative Holder.
Thanks.
All right. Further questions from members. Representative
Cooper. Madam Speaker, just a question to you. How is it that we don't make recommendations on all these tax bills?
Representative Stumper, we did not want to kill tax bills in this committee because tax policy should really be debated in the tax committee. We want to make certain that any local implications that may be in the bill that could have an impact on the local unit of government and policies surrounding local government are addressed. So we didn't want to let them go without at least seeing them, but we don't want to kill them here.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, I would renew my motion that House File 2780 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes without recommendation. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Hearing none. Motion prevails.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I was just going to tell Resident Holder, my wife and I were in Texas, stayed in a motel in January, and I couldn't believe the sales tax there. It was 19%.
Madam Chair. Representative Holder.
Representative Winchesky can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Texas has income tax. Is that correct?
Representative Winchesky.
Yes, that's right. But I, Madam Chair, if I may, Representative Holberg and Representative Yaros, a lot of taxes are, a lot of states are pretty good at exporting their tax to their visitors, and I'm certain that's what Representative Yaros is trying to do as well, since this is the beverage tax.
And Madam
Representative
Chair,
Holberg, in some instances, what they do is they keep their visitors from ever coming to their city with their sales tax as well.
All right, thank you. Actually, we're going to move on. We are a little behind. So, Representative Welty, please come to the table. House File 2827. I will move that House File 2827 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This bill came to my attention, or actually the idea came to my attention just this past year as Rochester is approaching 100,000. Officially, Rochester will not become a city of the first class until the next census takes place, but right now, administration and others are actually taking a look at how the city of the first class designation will actually impact the community of Rochester. So what we found was that there is a current statute that would have an impact upon something that is currently taking place between the Historical Society and the City of Rochester. And so I'm going to turn it over at this point to Irv Pleitschwit, who is the president of the Olmsted County Historical Society, will be testifying just on how this issue came to him. And then also David Kelleher is here from the Minnesota Historical Society to talk about a little bit of a historical perspective on this issue.
All right. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. My name is Irv Pleitschwit. I'm currently the president of Olmsted County Historical Society. Those of you who know about southeastern Minnesota, Olmsted County is pretty much dominated in population, and that by the city of Rochester. Over 100,000 total population of the county is about 130,000. We receive funding from the county, our historical society. We also receive funding from the city of Rochester, and we raise a lot of money on our own. Looking at this bill, I thought it was rather ambiguous what that meant, that section that says accepting cities of the first class. Does that mean they are exempt from that .02418, or does that mean that they are exempt from appropriating any money to historical societies which are affiliated with with the Minnesota Historical Society. So I talked to Representative Welty and Senator Lynch, and they and I both believe the easiest way to do that is just the striking that you see in the motion before you.
Questions for members? All right. Representative
Welty. And just to make one clarification, we did have health research look into this, and they felt that the best way to move forward to clarify this would be to insert this language. So it is very clear moving on into the future that a city of the first class can contribute to a county historical society. That's what this language does.
Thank you. Questions from members? Representative Lintescu.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may, could I ask a question, Ms. Dyson, on... can you remind us what the definition is of a first-class city? I know people often think it's only population, but my understanding is it's beyond that. It has to be a core center. For example, there are many suburbs that will pass 100,000 in the next few years here. And my understanding is, because I represent one, is that that would not make the city I represent a first-class city. You have to sort of be a downtown as well. And I'm just wondering if that's accurate.
Ms. Dyson, we'll give you a chance to look it up. Madam Chair, I'll read you the definition. And
okay.
It's in Minnesota Statutes 410.01. And a first-class city is first-class. Those having more than 100,000 inhabitants, provided that once a city is defined to be of the first class, it shall not be reclassified unless its population decreases by 25% from the census figures, which last qualified the city for inclusion in the class. And then there are the other classes. Changes in classification resulting from any future national census shall take effect on filing of certified copies of the census in the Office of the Secretary of State. And that's it. So it is strictly a population definition for state statutory purposes. And the just for your information, it means that Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth are the three first-class cities in the state. But Rochester and Bloomington are getting close to 100,000, and it would change their classification. In the last federal bicennial census, I think about 8 cities changed classifications and had to deal with laws that applied to them that had not applied to them before.
Okay. Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
All right. Further questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, I would renew my motion that House File 2827 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, committee members.
All right, Representative Peterson, House File 2907. I will move that it be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I thank you for your motion, and I represent Yellow Medicine County, the west end of the county. Representative Coonan, who's on this committee, represents the east end of the county. And today we're here with a bill some of us are familiar with in years past, making county offices appointed, in this case, the county recorder and county auditor treasurer, with language that has been before, I guess, the legislature before. I believe it's correct to say 23 counties currently have this option or status, and I don't believe any have been denied. Yellow Medicine County, I guess, you know, $50 million budget, 11,000 people, and I guess that's smaller in the state. And there's currently an opening in this area in the county. Somebody just retired, so the paragraph about incumbents to complete term is such that it's open right now. In 2005, I was asked by another county late in the legislative session, Lacaparle County, even smaller than Yellow Medicine County, for this treatment, and amended on the House floor after talking to then Chair Olson to a bill at Representative Heidrick, and then I believe Nobles County. Was done in 2005. With me today is Ryan Crosh, the Yellow Medicine County Administrator, who can describe, I guess, the timing and need for this bill.
Please go ahead and state your name for the record.
My name is Ryan Crosh, Yellow Medicine County Administrator. Madam Chair, members of the committee, on behalf of the Yellow Medicine County Board, we'd like to express our interest in moving forward with this legislation to make our county recorder and county auditor treasurer positions appointed rather than elected. As Representative Peterson stated, 23 counties have received this authority in the past and went ahead with making these positions appointed. This is something the county has been looking at for the last 2 years, and the timing is right now. Our auditor treasurer position is now open due to a retirement. It's the board's intention not to replace existing elected officials with this legislation, but rather assure that qualified individuals are in the put in the position, or the existing officials in those positions remain there. With a $15 million budget, the board feels that we need to assure that a qualified auditor treasurer is the one in charge of the finances of the county, and by making the position appointed, that would give the county the opportunity to appoint that position. With the legislation, there would be ample opportunity for the public to express opposition or being in favor of it. There's a public hearing process required with the legislation, and also an opportunity for a reverse referendum if there's a petition of voters that feel that that's necessary.
Questions from members. Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, do you know if in law the publication of the resolution, does that require the municipality or county in this case to inform the population that a reverse referendum is possible?
Madam Chair and Representative Diskin, I believe it is part of it. A couple times notice in, I don't know the correct term, but the major regional newspaper, I believe. So this would be a couple newspapers in the county, maybe a couple in the surrounding area that would cover the residents of this county. I believe it's required at least twice. Is that correct?
Yeah,
twice.
Representative Diskin.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you very much. And I did read the section where the official publication, it has to be published twice, and I understand that. I'm just wondering if the publication must inform the voters of the reverse referendum provision in law, or if it's just we're going to do this, we publish it twice, and no notice to the residents that a reverse referendum is possible and what the stipulations are. The other question I have, and Representative Peterson, you might be able to help me with this, is we had a bill previously in this committee. Earlier, Representative Rukavina brought forward a bill establishing a hospital district up around Aurora, and their reverse referendum requirement kicked in at 5%. I notice your reverse referendum kicks in at twice that amount, and so I'm wondering, it just brings up the matter of consistency in my mind, and if this 10% is consistent with the, I believe you said 28 other counties that have, 23 that have done that, if the 10% is consistent, or if this is a number that has been variable depending upon who brings the law to the committee.
Representative Biskins, I'm actually going to ask Deb Dyson, because I did just ask a question, and if you could clarify.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that, and I will listen to what Ms. Dyson has to say, but I'm counting on Representative Peterson to be right on top of that too. But we'll listen to what Ms. Dyson has to
say.
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair and Representative Diskin, the bill language in front of you is identical to all of the other special laws that have come in front of the committee over the past 7 years.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Dyson.
All right. Further question. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I've, you know, never been a great fan of these. But my question is, we've got elections coming up this November. Why don't you just put it on the election ballot, a referendum asking people if they would agree to this?
Representative Peterson?
Or I'm sorry, the county.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, the board has discussed that, and they feel that There's opportunity through the legislative process and ample opportunity for public input through the hearings to move forward with the appointment. And rather than having to put it on the election, being in a county of 11,000 people, our county boards will have this on the agenda, and if there's opposition to it through the public hearing process, you know, they may decide to actually put it on the referendum or the ballot this fall. But they feel that through the legislation here, there's ample opportunity for public input and to go that route instead.
Madam Chair,
Representative Markford.
Yeah, and I do appreciate that. There's huge differences, though, between the people you get at public hearings versus who would show up, especially for a presidential election. I mean, I don't think you can even gauge that off of that. And I just, and Representative Peterson knows this, and I'm not picking on you. I've always been opposed to these mergers without having, as a social studies teacher, I love elections, and the more the better, and that type of thing. So I voted against that constitutional amendment a few years ago when they took the treasurer off the ballot. I voted against that too, not that it mattered, but I guess, you know, we got an election coming up, you know, you could put it out there and see what happens. But thanks for your comments.
All right. Further questions from members? All right. Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House Bill 2907 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. All those opposed?
No.
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, raise your hand. All those opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Peterson. Representative
Thank
Morrow,
you.
You're next. I will move that House Bill 2816. I will move that House Bill 2816 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is very similar to Representative Peterson's bill, looking at Nicholas County in the position of Auditor Treasurer. I won't repeat the points that Representative Peterson just made, although they apply equally well to this position. I would like to introduce and turn to the Nicholas County Administrator, Bob Bedrowski, to raise some points as well, if I might.
All right. Go ahead. State your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and to make a few comments and points about this legislation. My name is Bob Podorowski. I am the Nicholas County Administrator. I've been with Nicholas County for the past 18 years. I've been in government for 37, it seems like, just yesterday. But anyway, what we are doing here today is the same as Yellow Medicine, except we are only asking that the Auditor Treasurer position be made appointed, or allow us to make it appointed. For many years, the Nicholas County Board has discussed the possibility of doing this, and this is the year that we felt was the best year to do it. Even though we aren't asking for this to occur until January of 2011, because there is someone in the office now, and we have no intention of doing it until the term of January 2011. The board has always recognized the highly specialized and technical nature of this position and the need for a very qualified individual to hold this office. This is one of the key positions in county government. It's the key financial position, the fiscal person, the audit function, and so we have always recognized the need for a qualified individual. Throughout the years, we've always been very fortunate in having very qualified individual. And yesterday, in preparation for the hearing today, I went back to, I think it was 1939, and through the years, we have obviously had some very qualified individuals that have served. We were very unfortunate about a year ago in last month, in that our auditor treasurer, basically 8 days after being appointed elected to the position of Auditor Treasurer, passed away very unexpectedly. He was 54 years old. And again, it brought up our feelings of the need to have the ability to make sure that we can attract qualified individuals to this position. We were very fortunate in that his chief deputy, who had been with Nicola County for 37 years, was willing to serve the unexpired term of Mr. Bruns, our auditor. But this is where we're very concerned. We feel that this position is so critical to the county and the county structure. We want to ensure that we can have qualified individuals serve in that position. Qualified individuals in going out for a job search if need be, and basically to assure that, because it is such a critical position. Our budget in Nicola County is about $29 million, and that office handles a lot of the responsibility for that budget. And so that's what we're asking for today. We, like Yellow Medicine, we also feel that this process, asking for special legislation, will allow adequate input from the public. It is correct that we do have the requirement of publishing in two separate publications for a two-week period, but Nicola County is a small county, and I can assure the committee that there will be adequate publication and adequate time for input from the public, because we will be covered by everyone from television to newspapers throughout the county. So that definitely will be something that will be in the public, and the public will have input.
Representative Diskin.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, and to the point Ms. Dyson made earlier, I appreciate that these are almost verbatim statutory law that has been passed for the municipalities, and but maybe there's an oversight here, I don't know, but I do believe that if it is the intent of the legislature to allow for reverse referendum, then in the publication of the intent that the board does to move in this direction, there should also be a statutory requirement that the publication include the ability for reverse referendum. Otherwise, we're talking inside baseball to most people outside of this body. The statutory law can say one thing, but if the notification of the ability to do a reverse referendum is left off the publication, then very few people outside these walls would know that that even exists. So I'm not going to craft an amendment here in committee right now, but I'd like the author to think about that, and I may have one if I see bills like this again.
Well, Representative Biskins, if you introduced a bill, I would certainly hear it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That would be the first of the biennium that I'd get heard. I'm sorry.
All right. Any further questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members.
Representative Tamar, House File 2906. I would move that House File 2906 be recommended to pass. You want this to go to the General Register?
I think it needs to go to Finance.
All right. What's the recommendation that it go to Finance and then should be re-referred to Public Safety Finance?
Yes.
That is the motion. Representative Tamar, welcome to the committee. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have an amendment if I could get it passed out.
All right. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about your bill while we're waiting?
Okay. Madam Chair, I don't know which provisions that you want to me to go over that deal specifically with local government. I can give you an introduction to the bill, and for those who haven't...
Representative Tamar, give us a very brief introduction to the bill, and then really only talk about the pieces that apply to the local government committee, because we're not going to hear
amendments that have nothing to do with local government. I'm not accepting any amendments about banning breeds or any of those things. I've agreed to take the author's amendment because he's taking something out. Is that correct?
That's correct.
He's taking something out of the bill, but I'm not going to be adding in things that are not within the jurisdiction of this committee.
Well, basically, Madam Chair, members, this bill is just tightening up some of the existing statutes, 34751 that deals with the dangerous dogs and potentially dangerous dogs. As you probably know, there have been a few high-profile incidents in the metropolitan area where individuals have been mauled and harmed by dogs. And as you probably know, there was a bill that was introduced this session to ban breed-specific dogs. And this is, in some ways, this is a reaction to that. It's just the acknowledgement that we do need to toughen up our existing statutes relative to dangerous dogs and potentially dangerous dogs, and that's essentially what the bill does. I have with me Bill Forbes, who is the with the Minnesota Animal Control Association. If you have specific questions about the bill, I could just say that there's briefly, if you want me to go through what some of the changes are, whatever. I'm trying to think of what specifically is. If you have the amendment, we could do that now.
Let's move the amendment. I would move that House File 2906A9 be recommended, or I would move that amendment. Do you want to just tell us what that does, Representative Paymer?
This deletes lines. On page two, it deletes lines 6 through 10, and this was an amendment that was put on in the Public Safety Policy Committee that dealt with providing instruction classes for individuals who possess a dangerous dog, and in trying to figure out how to do this, we would have to figure out some way of developing materials and training and getting people certified to provide all of these lessons. Instead, this would be particularly problematic in greater Minnesota, so we decided to take it out and maybe for another day.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Representative Paymer, the main reason this is here is because Animal Control Authority would be cities and counties, which is under the jurisdiction of this committee. So if you just want to clarify if this creates any new responsibilities or any new authorities to the authorities that we oversee.
Why don't I have Mr. Forbes to address that?
All right. Mr. Forbes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bill Forbes. I'm Secretary Treasurer of the Minnesota Animal Control Association, which is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization of animal control people. The animal control authority business, a lot of what's in here simply clarifies some things and straightens up some language from the last go-around when the county was more or less removed from responsibility or blanket responsibility for taking care of registration of dangerous dogs. And we started going through it and realized, well, you know, the county's getting the money and the local government's doing all the work. Why don't we just change this all to the Animal Control Authority, which could be the county in some cases if it's outside in a rural area where there is no other animal control.
Questions from members. Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Paymer, I guess that is a question. And from the testimony I heard, it sounds like not all 87 counties have animal control authorities. Would this legislation, in essence, mandate that that every county have an animal control authority? And if that wasn't your intent, I wonder then why we would not have kept a county and just inserted or an animal control authority, and maybe that doesn't work either, but my concern is that for those counties that have chosen not to have an animal control authority, we're almost mandating one upon them.
Representative Hamer? Mr. Forbes?
Representative Diskin? Yeah. Yeah, Madam Chair. Really, this is existing language for the most part that's just being cleaned up. The counties were having some issues quite a while back about not wanting to do the registrations for dangerous dogs, and they very much supported relegating it to local authorities, and it really hasn't changed. The county sheriff is the responsible person for picking up stray dogs, and suddenly finds there's a dangerous dog in the community that they want to do something about, then the county sheriff would be the animal control authority.
Representative Diskins, is that clarifying?
I'm not quite sure, unless, of course, there is some other statutory language somewhere which would say that the local unit of government is the animal control authority, absent one being in existence.
Madam Chair, the language in statutes, I believe, is that the animal control authority means an agency of the state, county, municipality, or any other governmental subdivision of the state which is responsible for animal control operations in its jurisdiction. So it could be any entity. Someone has to be responsible for controlling dangerous animals in the county. So it's whoever gets designated. And that's existing. That's the definition of animal control authority.
Okay, Madam Chair, that helps me out then.
All right, thank you. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tamar, I'm looking at a couple of the sections here. The disposition of seized animals, section 12, and then the section 13. Are there provisions under law now that call for hearings of seized animals, and are there currently restrictions on who is prohibited from owning dogs?
Representative Tamar.
I don't believe that in current law there is a right now to a hearing, and this is something we're offering owners of dangerous dogs.
That's correct.
He's the animal guy. And the second question about the restrictions, I'm sorry, Representative Lanning, what was that?
Yeah, the same question there. Are there current provisions under law that where dog ownership is prohibited and under certain circumstances, or is this a new section in law?
Representative Hamer?
I don't believe this is currently in law. The only restrictions that are in current law, well, no, there isn't in current law.
Okay.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad to see that this hearing provision is there. I think there ought to be that kind of recourse if an animal is seized. I'm wondering, in the case of the restrictions, that section, you could say more about. It seems to me that's a rather broad, restrictive or more individuals who would be prohibited. Could you say more about why it's so broad or why there are so many categories of restrictions here?
Representative Hamer, Mr. Forbes.
Representative Lanning, Madam Chair. This really is the heart of the bill as far as strengthening responsibility, putting it on the dog owner rather than the dog, because we keep seeing the same people over and over again. Their dog gets ordered destroyed because of violations of the dangerous dog law, and the next day we've got a new dog and we're doing the whole thing all over again. So this to kick in, you have to have a number of violations, including one of them would be the manslaughter, second-degree manslaughter, if the dog would kill somebody.
or they have to be convicted a couple of times of their dog being off the property and doing substantial or great bodily harm. I don't remember what the third one is, but it's also a criminal code, similar to the first two. Or they've had one dog order destroyed, and then they violate further these sections. And the idea is you've proven that you just don't get it, and rather than have you just turning more and more dogs loose on the public, we would rather just say you can't do this anymore.
Further questions? Representative
Bisker. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Representative Pimar, I guess I do have a concern about particularly Section 13, Part 5, and maybe you can help clarify it. If I look at Part 5 and then I switch over to 347.56, which is over on page 7 that you referenced, I noticed that a dog who inflicts multiple bites, and of course that's more than one, right? So if a dog inflicts two bites on a person unprovoked, and I understand that is indeed a dangerous dog, and I don't have any problems with that dog being destroyed. Right? My grandfather would have taken her right out behind the shed, for goodness sakes, and did in one instance. But if that automatically then kicks in prohibition from dog ownership for the rest of that owner's life, I'm a little concerned about that. So if you could help clarify that. And then also with the restrictions, there is a number of references to Section 609 and different parts of 609. And I'm just wondering, Representative Tamar, if we have dangerous dog statutes in two very different parts of law, and if there shouldn't be some consolidation there.
Well, we are getting a little far afield from the local government.
We are. I appreciate your latitude, Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair, let me try the last one first. I'll let Mr.
Representative Tamar.
There are two sections in statute, if I'm not mistaken. 609.227 is the language that deals with destroying dangerous animals. The court orders that an animal be destroyed that has caused death or injury, and how that's done in a proper and humane manner, et cetera, et cetera. That's 609.227, and then
Representative
Fiskin. Madam Chair, I can withdraw my question because you are correct. This is out of the purview of this committee, and I know that this bill is going to Representative Tamar's committee, of which I sit, so I can ask him, and they are more pertinent to that committee.
Great, thanks. Representative Colbert.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to add, substantial bodily harm, we're not talking about a minor little bite here that might be, this is substantial bodily harm under 609.02. So.
Okay. Right.
But what was the other question?
It's okay, Representative Tamar. He withdrew it.
Oh, okay.
So, Representative Folberg, we still have one more bill yet to get through, and we have 9 minutes left in the committee.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I'll be very, very quick here. My question has to do with this symbol. Is there like a universal symbol? Do you have a copy of it? I'm curious what it looks like, number one. And then, in current law, in your bill on line, or page 2, line 15, talks a warning symbol to inform children. Why wouldn't that just be individuals?
Mr. Forbes?
Representative Colbert, Madam Chair, I'm looking rapidly through here to find the sign. Why it said children, I believe, was the intent being that not just the thing that said beware of dog, but something that kids could look at and say, oh. And I got a little tiny one here in the statute. The big nondescript dog lunging at a hand like that. And that was what the Department of Public Safety came up with. The language in here is simply to drop
drop the part about the Department of Public Safety producing a sign because that's already been done.
Is that just Minnesota Department, or is this like a worldwide symbol? I mean, we're doing all this with traffic and bathrooms and having all these symbols. So there is no national or international symbol for a dangerous dog, but rather Minnesota's just going to come up with a leaping dog and a hand, I guess.
Mr. Forbes.
All right. Thank you.
Further questions? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this thing? Seeing none, I would renew my motion that House File 2906 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Finance Committee with the recommendation that it be sent to Public Safety Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Kamar. Last is House File 2249, Representative Clark. Oh, I guess we're taking up the Senate file on this one. So, the recommendation is that Senate File 357 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Housing Policy and Finance Committee. That's your committee. Representative Clark, it's my understanding that you've worked out some agreements.
We have, and I would like to just briefly describe the bill and have my witness talk about what the need for the bill is, and we can make that pretty sure.
Great. Go ahead.
First of all, this is a Senate file, and my senator, Senator Linda Bergen, has very strong feelings about the need for this bill, and I have talked about the changes that I'm proposing to the amendments, and I believe that she'll be fine with them. Basically, we're trying to remove a barrier to low-income and moderate-income housing development in our city of Minneapolis, and I guess if someone moved the amendment first, that would be helpful.
We don't have it yet.
You don't have it yet?
Okay. Right now.
Well, while it's being done, maybe we could just talk about the reason for the
go ahead.
And I'll let Mr. Matt Sutrick.
Please go ahead, state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Matt Sutrick. I'm a project manager with Project for Pride and Living, a non-profit housing developer in Minneapolis. If you're not familiar with us, we've developed about 400 units of ownership housing in the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul since we began in 1972. Many of those homes have been on formerly tax forfeited lots in those cities. I guess I don't want to get into, or I'm not an expert in the nuances involved on the part of municipalities in putting or implementing the proposal outlined in Senate File 357. But I just want to make the point that it really allows for the creation of a whole lot more affordable housing. It costs us at PPL approximately $180,000 to build a quality, affordable home that conforms to most urban neighborhoods. If you have a buyer at 60% area median income or somebody earning approximately $40,000 a year, and they mortgage $175,000 on that home, they have a monthly payment, PITI, of approximately $1,400. This is about 34% of their income, and it's barely affordable, and that's just at cost, just at the cost of the home. If you add a $50,000 land payment to this equation, you now have a monthly outlay on the part of the family of over $1,800, well over 45% of that family's monthly income. The home is no longer affordable. This is often the difference between affordability for low to moderate income families and no affordability. In rental housing situations, the fees can be prohibited. If there's a 1% park dedication fee, as we often see in larger developments, on a $4 million total development cost, hey, that's $40,000. That has to be accounted for by either increased rents or increased subsidies. So in rental housing and larger developments, it also challenges affordability. To deal with this, we often ask the city, the state, the county, other public entities for subsidy dollars, both value gap and affordability gap subsidies. The truth is those pots of money are shrinking. They're harder to get than they used to be. And as a result, less affordable housing opportunities are able to be created because there's less of those dollars to go around. Therefore, I support Senate File 357. I'd like to thank Representative Clark for putting it forth, and I ask for your support. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, maybe while we're waiting for the amendment to come back, I guess, is that right? I could just maybe tell members what it does. unless there's questions, but I get maybe just to tell our members questions for the witness. Basically, we're just saying that when there is a nonprofit organization that gets money from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to create this kind of affordable housing, and if the city is transferring vacant property to that nonprofit, they cannot charge more than the acquisition cost of the property, the cost to them, and would waive the fees that are related to that. So that's what the bill will do when it is amended. So it's a little bit different than what you have before you in that it's limited to the city of Minneapolis and that it's dealing with vacant property only.
Okay.
And then there's a provision at the end of it that the council said would be there, which is the city itself needs to decide whether or not it wants to accept this provision as part of the having a distinct a local law that applies to one jurisdiction, I guess.
Given that we all have the amendment now, I'll move the S-035782 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion or amendment is added to the bill. Yes, Representative Holbert, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Clark, just to be clear, this is only to Minneapolis now, so other cities won't be subjected to that.
That's correct.
And then just a point in your effective date, you may want to look at some kind of language for projects started after such and such day. There may very well be projects that are in the work in which contracts have been maybe developed and not finally signed or whatever. And so you don't want to, if somebody's nine-tenths of the way through a project and just have one little thing left to do and this law kicks in, it may in fact turn a project on its head.
I think that's probably fine. The problem is not being able, Mr. Chairman, to even do the projects because they're prohibited by the cost of the land transfer in the beginning.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think it makes it make more funds to raise and hence, you know, higher prices for homes, the need for higher rents and greater subsidies. So it's really taking from one public pocket then and putting it in another.
And that's in response to your question, I think that's fine. So that was
Representative Holbert, did you have another question?
Mr. Chair, yeah, it's just something that they might consider as the bill moves forward, that there are different projects and different stages of development that this hard line might put in jeopardy. And I'm not, I mean, everybody has a different way of looking at it, but I'm thinking that this might in fact deter these kind of projects having to waive all of those fees. I mean, my experience with communities is they seem to work this out and know what they have into property, et cetera, and if in fact, I mean, I know it's just for Minneapolis, and you guys are going to do what you want to do, but I would view it as a detriment to making these happen and making cities less willing to work on these kinds of projects if they aren't able to recoup any of the costs that they have involved in the property.
Well, Representative Clark, did you want to comment?
Yeah, it doesn't refer that there's no recouping of any cost. It's no greater than the cost to the city for the acquisition of the property, so if there's a cost to the city, that can be recouped, but the additional fees, and actually what's happening right now is that projects are not going forward because of this problem. There is a barrier that we're trying to address.
Representative Holbert?
And Madam Chair, my point was not with what they had into the actual cost of the property, but lines 13 and 14, that all of their development and other fees related to the project that it would otherwise impose. I mean, we're talking about sewer connection charges, we're talking about all kinds of things that the city has to pay to the Met Council, that they have to pay to other entities, and some cities are going to say, we're not willing to bear those costs for this project, and so go find another city that is. Mm-hmm. Where a city might say, maybe we'll pay 25% or work out some kind of arrangement.
Representative Clark?
Yes, and I don't know if you were, I think you were here when we were hearing the fact that those fees can raise a single unit of housing cost $40,000 to $80,000. And, you know, if we're trying to do affordable housing, that really makes it very, very difficult. And what we are talking about is state-subsidized housing. So it's already subsidized by the MHFA, and I'm asking my city, at least in this case, to be more flexible and help us continue to be able to do affordable housing.
Is anyone else who would like to testify before or against this bill? No one else? Okay, seeing none, I would move that, I would renew my motion that Senate File 357 be recommended to pass as amended and placed, or passed on to the Housing Policy and Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion passes.
Thank you,
We have minutes yet to do. Let's see. We have the February 18th minutes. Representative Cronin, would you like to move the February 18th minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move for approval of the February 18th minutes.
Okay, Representative Cronin moves approval of the February 18th minutes. All those in favor, or any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Is that all?
What about? Oh, we also have February 20th minutes. I'm sure, Representative Scalzi, you've read through those carefully. Did you?
Yes, I would. I did, and I would move that they approve.
Representative Scalzi moves approval of the February 20th minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? And we have the February 25th minutes. Representative Biskins, I know you've read those carefully. Would you like to move approval?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, there's only a couple of paragraphs, and I was able to get through them. So, and I would agree. I move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Biskins. Representative Biskins has moved approval of the February 25th minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion adjourned. Thank you.